how about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John Littlefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
I do love talking to MSPs to get some insights into where their heads are at. So let's talk to one. James Fair joins us on this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. The best place to start is always giving you the opportunity to tell me your journey. So something like, how did you get here and what are you doing now?
Yeah. So I love stories. I started as an entry-level tech and worked my way up through every bit of it. I had both the pain and pleasure of learning how not to lead, and not to bash on my previous employers, but I had a boss at one point, one of my first IT bosses, who really showed me all the ways you should not lead people. I mean, he was dictatorial. I have this great story where the entire company was down and I ran in the server room and there's this switch rack and all the LEDs are solid, so they're blinking like they normally are. And I'm like, well, I think I found the problem. And I look at my cohort. He's like, I'm not touching it. That was the environment we worked in, right? We were afraid to touch anything. I'm like, and after a minute, I'm like, this is ridiculous. So I unplugged it. I plugged it back in. And the whole company came back up. And then he came rolling in the room, you know, looking for somebody to yell at and realized I'd already fixed it. So anyway, just this grand experience of how not to lead people. So I got some great experience from that guy. I appreciate the time we had. Around just before Christmas time, he said, I want a raise. And he went to the CTO and demanded a raise. And they said, no. And he said, all right, fine. I'm going home. I'm going to go home for 2 weeks. And in 2 weeks, I'm going to come back. And you better give me my raise when I get back. So for 2 weeks, my partner and I, we went crazy and fixed everything we could. You know, we went nuts. We just worked 6 hours, you know, 6 day weeks. We were working 14 hour days. And when we got so much stuff fixed that when he came back and said, all right, you ready to pay me my raise? He's like, no, you can stay gone. And, about 6 months later, they came to me and said, we'd like you to be the IT manager. So that was, how I stepped into the IT manager role.
So tell me about the business you work in now and give you the overview and all that.
So, then I went to work for a company called Executech, and that's where I am now. It was what really drew me there was it was ranked the best place to work in the state a couple of years running. We are a multi-service provider, primarily cloud cybersecurity and IT support. And we're typically the small to medium business, folks that know they need support but don't necessarily want to hire a full-time person on their own. And we'll come in and take care of all their IT needs. So we call ourselves an IT outsource department. And our differentiator is really that we hire people-focused people. So we really believe in a people-first approach. So we get IT people who don't think that they are the top of the food chain. Who, you know, we know that IT exists only because of business, not the other way around.
All right. So listeners like to know specs. So sure. Revenue, employees, reach, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So we've acquired a bunch of companies in the last couple of years. We've up to about 150 technicians across the West. So we are shooting to be the largest MSP in the Intermountain West, west of the Mississippi is what we're shooting for. So I think we just did almost broke $100 million last year and on target for much more this year.
Okay. Now you've said two different things in there. You call yourself an IT outsource provider, but then you also slipped in MSP. So how do you guys position yourself to the market?
So we position ourselves as an MSP. That's really what we are. You know, we're going to bring in cybersecurity, we're going to bring in cloud, and we're going to bring in our bread and butter. Where we came from was IT services, supporting small and medium businesses for all their IT needs. And we do things a little differently, at least here in the Utah region. We will assign techs to clients. So rather than getting some random person on the phone each time that you call, you get James. And James knows you and knows your environment. We become part of their team. So we really love this approach where you call, you get someone who knows you and knows your environment already. And can, you know, when you say, oh, I'm having that printer problem again, they immediately know what's going on without having to retrain someone.
Tell me a little bit more about how that works. So are you assigning, is it a team? Is it an individual person? Like, how are you doing that customer management?
We'll start with a individual person typically. So we'll have a customer support rep as well involved and a sales rep involved. But really, we want to assign a primary technician on the account. Often in the larger clients, we'll have a secondary technician as well to help cover in case they get sick or go on vacation. But the idea is a single point of contact that you get to know, you form relationships of trust with, and that gets to know your environment and what, you know, all the nuances of your environment.
Now, let's talk a little bit about how your people are spending their time. You've got that tech, and he's an engineer or however you're thinking about them. They're assigned to a particular customer. What are they spending most of their time doing for customers? Is it tickets? Is it printers? Is it more advanced work? Is it project? Give me a little sense of where their time investment is.
Yeah. Ideally, we'd like it to be, you know, proactive work, of course. We want to go in and we want to not just resolve issues, but prevent them from happening whenever possible. So our approach is, let's put out the immediate fire, then let's look at it and say, what can we do in the future to prevent it from happening? Projects is typically done by a projects team. We'll involve the assigned technician, but bigger projects will typically bring in a separate team for that. Cybersecurity is a separate group. Cloud is a separate team. But the day-to-day technician is probably, knocking out tickets, having conversations with people. We like to have quarterly reviews to see how we're doing and to put together a roadmap for IT clients so that it's not just, let's not just sit here and patch things, but let's put together a path moving forward that's budget-friendly, makes sense to the organization, but that will help them get to a better place down the road.
All right. Now you said a lot in there. Let's break that down in terms of how that account gets managed a little bit, because if you've got separate teams for cloud and you've got a separate team for security and is it a separate team for business? Like how is the coordination done there? So the customer is getting a really good experience.
Yeah, that's a great question. Primarily the customer service manager is going to be the guy making sure everything's coordinating well. But, you know, most of our interface with these folks is going to be IT services. So the assigned IT consultant is going to be the front man. It's going to be your point of contact or front woman, of course, will be the point of contact. And from there, we'll coordinate with the other teams. We'll do separate agreements often. You know, if you're going to spin up a server in Azure, then let's create a separate agreement that server is being managed by a cloud team who has that technical prowess as their primary, you know, experience.
Now, help me understand then a little bit more about where your customers are seeing the real value here. Because again, you threw in some stuff that always makes you interested, right? You're throwing up a server in Azure, and you've talked about cloud. Define that a little bit for me. Like, how much of is it infrastructure as a service, software as a service? how much cloud? Give me a little insight into the way you guys are delivering on your clients there.
Yeah. So first of all, I would say that our primary go-to, the reason people come to us, is that it's not just one person with one set of skills and one set of knowledge. We're bringing in a team of people. Now, there may be one person assigned to your account, but that one person has a team of 150 technicians behind him or her. And so regardless of whatever item comes up, whatever challenge it is, whatever technical need is presented, although that person may not know it, chances are someone in an organization does that he can pull from. So you're not just hiring a person, you're hiring an entire team of IT professionals. Because IT, you know, anyone who's gone into this field knows that it's broad and deep and changes all the time. So in order for us to keep up with that, we've got people with different skill sets across the different fields. So yeah, go ahead. I see your question.
No. I was just listening there, like, because it feels at sort of a first glance very custom, which is an interesting sort of custom consulting engagement. But at the same time, it stands a little bit against that sort of tension of that you heard with most MSPs around standardization and everybody looks the same every process. Tell me a little bit about how you think about that balance with your customers.
We really believe that every business is different, and so we tailor every solution different for every client. Now, that being said, we've been doing this a long time. We know what's best in the business, and we're going to certainly proffer things that we believe are the best, you know, bang for the customer's dollar, for sure. Now, there are different organizations that have different needs, so we may tailor it differently. And some organizations don't like certain products, right? They may come to us and say, we want to do cloud-based email. And we say, we recommend 365. They're like, oh, we hate Microsoft. Like, Google products it is, right? So we'll tailor it based on their desires and their needs. But we are not a, here's your single stack of everything when you come on board. There are certain minimums we'll have, right? We're going to make sure you have endpoint protection. We're going to make sure you've got cloud-based backups to be able to recover from any kind of incident that may be out there. But in general, we're going to tailor a solution different for every business. So it does create a challenge for our consultants, right? They may go to an organization or five different organizations, and it's five completely different environments that they need to learn and grow from. But by the same token, we've got folks who are deep and broad in the IT spectrum because they are dealing with all these different environments. And because of that, we can say what worked here or didn't work here, we're going to bring to this client because we know it does work based on these previous other clients.
So how are you keeping them? Because that would feel like right. Because that's the bit that we're talking a lot about too in the market is we see lots of, it's difficult to keep techs. You have to keep broad knowledge. You have to keep them engaged. Like how are you keeping them?
People first approach is really what it comes down to for us. We really believe in a kind of the opposite of micromanager. I don't know what the word would be, but we really believe in trusting people. We're going to give you the tools to do the job and let you go do the job. I mean, my very first client was a medical organization, and the founder of the company is no longer with us, but he and I met with this group and we got done afterward. And I'm like, okay, do you want to report? I'll get done with some of this stuff today. He said, no. And I was like, oh, like a weekly progress report then. My previous job, I was micromanaged to death. So, you know, so I said, how about a weekly progress report? And he says, no. At this point, I'm a little flustered. I'm like, well, do you want to get a report at all? And he's like, not really. Unless the client gets angry, then let me know. So we've really believed in growing that and keeping that same tradition alive, that we're going to support you. We got people to have your back. We're all in Teams chat together to support each other. And it's a big part of what we do is helping each other succeed. But we're going to trust people to go do the job and take care of the client the way they need to be taken care of. And that goes a long way.
I can hear the screams of listeners, though, saying, well, how are you measuring everything, right? So how are you measuring against deliverables or an SLA or contract delivery? Like, how are you? If you're being that flexible, it feels like there's an ability for stuff to be much more difficult to track.
Sure.
How do you address that?
Billable hours is one of our primary measurements, right? We're going to make sure that they have a certain number of billable hours in any day. And we're going to measure that against the number of hours that a client has purchased. So we're monitoring that to make sure the client is being properly managed. And we're visiting with them quarterly to make sure we're resizing as necessary. If the organization is scaled down or if the IT needs to scale down, we'll scale down the hours as well. Whereas if their needs have grown, we'll certainly increase the hours. Coupled with that, we started introducing a managed IT service where we're going to do a front line of a help desk group who will triage the majority of things, and then we'll triage that stuff to the tier threes who go on site as needed. So that's been our new model. which seems to work a little better for the large organizations and folks that want to kind of offload all those calls, or that may have their own IT, or their own internal IT staff, and they want to offload the frontline calls. That works pretty well for them.
Do all the client relationships look different? Because implied in that sounds, you know, I'm hearing again the possibility for some people are billable hours, some are on packages. Like, is everybody a different contract and relationship, or how much is that standardized?
Most of the clients in Utah, I would say, are on an hourly arrangement. Now, we don't do any contracts ever. So you talk about people, you know, being able to fire us. That's a real thing for us. So we also have this onus on us to perform every time we go, because we have no contractual arrangement. But the flip side of that is that encourages us to be on our best, number one. It encourages us to go on site. I've seen other arrangements with other MSPs. I'm not slamming our competition. You know, what works for them is great. But where they're incented not to go on site because their profit margin exists in staying as remote and as little hands-on as possible. That's not the environment we want to do. That's not the relationship we want to create with our clients.
Give me a sense of sort of the profitability you're maintaining with this model.
We're upwards of 20, 25%.
Okay. Yeah. People would be asking, right? Because that's one of the mantras that you hear. So within that, it feels very IT outsourcing, lots of people, time, consultancy. How much has this changed sort of over the last, say, 5 years? I'm putting, knowing that there's a, you know, a 2-year pandemic blip in there as well. Right. But what I'm looking more is the arc of the types of services customers are consuming. How much has it changed in the last 5 years?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And one that we really had to address, because originally we said, we're just going to assign a tier 3 technician who is a communicative type of person, not necessarily your introverted type tech, to every client. And early on, that was very sustainable. And for those kind of people who are extroverted technicians, you know, there's not a great deal of them, but they are certainly out there. They thrived in this environment. But eventually, we started having some larger competitions move in. So Adobe, Domo, some of these other big players started moving in the Salt Lake area because land was cheap, lots of employees, technicians available. And suddenly, competition shot up through the roof, and we were running out of tier threes. We started having trouble finding enough tier threes to support it. So that's when we moved to this model of, let's do a frontline support model of some tier 1, tier 2 type stuff, and then have tier threes in the back to handle the more technical aspects of it. So that was one of the big changes. We started moving to this model. We are looking at a more team-based approach. We did find some challenges where a relationship with a technician would be formed with an organization over a period of years. And then if the technician left for whatever reason, the customer was like, well, I don't want a new person. I don't want to train somebody else. So we had some challenges where they would want to, you know, often want to bounce if they lost their technician that they've grown to know and become familiar with. So we decided to start doing a 2-tech approach or a team approach in a lot of cases for that. And then, of course, the pandemic and everyone's doing a work from home environment. So we started doing more remote work just to make sure we're covering environments that don't have an office to go to.
Is that maintaining now, the remote environment? Like, how much of your team is remote now?
I'd say probably still no more than 30 or 40% of their time is spent remote. We still want to primarily go on site. We're not the sit in the basement or the server room and get called and deal with stuff. We want to go meet people. We want to walk around an environment. You know, someone will say, oh, hey, while you're here, can you fix, right? And you don't get that over a phone call. So we want to go and form relationships and meet people and walk around their environments and get to know them and be present, be visible.
One of my basic premise, and I want to get your take on it from the field, is that we're particularly, the smaller the company, the more they're going to lean into SaaS as the sort of default way of delivering. How much are you seeing that in your customer base, that sort of new installs lean that way to cloud versus other models?
In the small to medium business, I'd say it's still pretty a low percentage. In the larger businesses, absolutely. The ability to scale on the fly, to not have to worry about a server room, to have redundant power and internet, all these advantages being cloud, makes a big difference. And we, as an MSP, we look for products that have a single pane of glass where we can support all of our clients through a cloud-based administration. So our endpoint, our email, even our firewalls, if we can, anything that we can do to manage that through one pane of glass, absolutely. We recommend that. We sell that. We pitch that whenever possible because it just makes a lot of sense.
So what are those smaller customers doing?
Traditionally, they'll still have a single server in the environment. A lot of times, they'll have one Active Directory server with a bunch of workstations. In some places we've seen where they have no server because they're doing everything cloud-based, you know, software as a service, some website they're using, that kind of a thing. But generally, I would say we see single server, Active Directory, small servers environments still to this day, quite a few of those.
Do you have a theory on why that is? Is it bandwidth in the area? Is it you know, are there other factors too? What why are you not seeing as much as you might see in other markets?
Yeah, there are certainly a lot of folks who are saying, "Hey, what's this cloud stuff about? You know, how can we reap some benefits here?" And we certainly will pitch that to them. But a lot of small to medium businesses, they've got too many hats to wear. It's the last thing they're worried about. Cloud may seem, you know, in the construction industry, for the smaller organizations, cloud seems like some very esoteric thing that they don't even want to have to play in or deal with. So in those cases, we're still dealing with servers. I would say it's budgetary. It is something to do with the industry, depending on the industry. And then a comfort level with what does that mean? When you say my cloud, where's my stuff going? Right? There's a bit of a hands-off feel to it that a lot of people don't like.
Gotcha. Okay. So at your size and scale, how are you continuing to grow? Is it all organic? Are you doing acquisition? You know, you probably want to continue that. What's the strategy there?
Both. Yeah, we grow organically. We have a sales team, internal sales team, who's landing more clients. We are definitely doing acquisitions as well. Typically small MSPs across the West who are maybe the owner is looking to get out or hand it off to somebody else. We purchased quite a few of those as well.
Okay. You want to give us a little bit of insight into some of those deals? Like, are they, what kinds of deals are you doing?
So we took over a group in Phoenix. They were 15 users and 15 technicians and some support staff to go with it. So typically a smaller environment like that we can come in and, you know, we've been doing this a long time since 1999. We know how to streamline this and what tools to bring in. We kind of modernize them and we bring them up to a cybersecurity level so they're compliant. And then we start bringing in other acquisitions. So a lot of times we will assign new acquisitions to some of those existing places as well. We got an office in Spokane, for instance, and we purchased a nearby MSP. They're going to fold up underneath that group.
Gotcha. And those tend to be, I mean, just to give a little bit of the framework, are they all different or they look like a pattern where you're sort of doing a particular buyout or over time? Are they all different?
Yeah, they're all different. Yeah, okay. They're all different.
So what's keeping you up at night as you sort of think about where we're all going right now with this market? What keeps you up at night?
Well, like everybody else, ransomware is certainly a big deal, right? I mean, the cybersecurity space, the attackers have realized that the multiple layers of security we're putting in place are difficult to get through, but the poor person who's working at 6 p.m. through their 200th email is a great attack vector, so they're going to them. So I would say one of the challenges we're running into is there's a huge need to layer on cybersecurity to protect an organization, and yet a lot of firms may be hesitant to spend that level of income to do it, that level of budget. So it used to be a pretty small piece of the overall profit level was spent on cybersecurity. But this day and age, it's got to be more, unfortunately. It's just the way, it's just the world we live in. So ransomware is a big deal. You know, we're doing a lot of work internally to secure ourselves because we're a target. We're a big MSP. We have a lot of keys to the kingdom out there, including some critical infrastructure. We've got to make sure that internally, we're also doing best practices and keeping ourselves secure while at the same time allowing our technicians to be able to do their job. And that's a tough balance, right? They used to have access to everything. Now they all have access to the clients that they're assigned to. And they get a new client, then they have to reach out and say, hey, how do I get access to this client? And so there's some tension that we create when we layer on these levels of security internally that are necessary, but are sometimes painful for change.
Is it customers unwilling to spend? Is it not seeing the investment bit? Like what's the biggest challenge there to overcome that?
Yeah, I would say it's the unwillingness to spend, you know, to spend that much, or the sticker shock when you go to them and say, this is what you need to be, you know, to be protected. They're like, so that's a lot of the reason we put together these roadmaps. Is that we want to put together that someone's budget friendly and makes sense and that moves the needle, at least getting them down that path. There are a lot of organizations who take credit cards who don't know what PCI compliance is, for instance, right? And And while that may not be a big deal, as long as things are going well, should they be breached or attacked and they get, you know, severe fine levied on them suddenly, then that's what we're trying to prevent. And we're trying to prevent the attacks where they come in and all of a sudden other machines have a ransom on the screen that says, hey, you know, pay or otherwise you lose all your files. And even worse nowadays, ransomware is turning into exfiltration. So they're taking intellectual property and saying, you either pay or we're going to post this on a public server somewhere. This happened to the University of Utah here in Salt Lake City. They got ransomware and they did everything right. They did everything by the book. They had it all prepared. They had the backups, but they ended up paying because they had exfiltrated student data and they proved that they had the student data. So they ended up paying in order to prevent the exposure of all that student data and the hit from that they would end up taking. So exfiltration of data and ransomware is unfortunately a real big deal.
So what do you think it's going to take to change that dynamic? If the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results,
right?
What do you think it's going to take to change that dynamic?
I think enough organizations, number one, we need to start being a lot more visible about it, which means we got to start being public about it. Too many times we want to keep it hush-hush. We don't want the PR about it. We don't want the potential hit to the customer base. So I think a lot of organizations need to start being a lot more open about what's going on in their attack history. Not to throw out names, but LastPass, for instance, they came out recently and said, hey, we had a second breach and here's what happened and here's what we're doing about it. And a lot of people are like, well, I'm going to go use a different product. Well, I'm saying, no, support them because they're being transparent about it. And that's the only way we're going to combat this thing is to start being over and above and to start assisting each other, right? Hey, this happened to me. What are you doing about it? How did you protect yourself when this happened? Because, you know, like Windows 11 rolled out. I'm like, ooh, where are the anti-ransomware features? And my taskbar got centered. And I'm like, really? That's what we're going to spend our time and effort on? You know, the cool new features are great, but let's stop this behemoth, this elephant in the room that we're all ignoring. And I think the only way to get there is for us to all start being a lot more open and transparent and supportive of each other as we wade through this muck that we've got ourselves in.
So do you think it's a carrot or a stick that changes that? Because you can make an argument, right, that it's about normalizing that, or you can make it also an argument that it's required, that it becomes legally required. Like, what would be your take on the carrot or stick approach to this?
I think one of the best things I saw happen was here in Utah, they were looking at legislation which would diminish the potential fine anyone would be levied, an organization would be levied, if they put things in place, a minimum level of cybersecurity protection in place, and then to be able to prove that. So I think legislation that says, hey, we're going to protect you if you've done your best to make sure it didn't happen to you, is about the only way we're going to do it. So it's a little bit of both. You know, we're going to help you be protected against it, and we're going to give you the carrot that you're not going to end up in court or nearly as bad, you know, beat up in court if you're doing the things that you need to do to protect your clients.
How much of you and your team are spending thinking about regulation as part of your day-to-day operations? How much time is that taking up now?
Way too much. I'll be honest. It's not a fun place to be. I mean, I had the unpleasant task of digging through the dark web to look at this attack group, this ransomware group had exfiltrated a bunch of data and they had it up for sale. And my job was to go look to see if one of the organizations we were working with, if their data was on there. So it's way too much. But by the same token, it needs to be done. We need to have these things in place. And lawmakers aren't necessarily technical people. So I'm actively involved in the chamber here at Salt Lake City and at some other initiatives that we have going on, as are many of our other local MSPs here in Salt Lake City. So I would say that's increasing far more than it used to be, but we need to help government get there to properly stop this. It's not going to happen from the organization, the corporations on their own. Obviously, it just keeps getting worse.
Makes sense. So my last question, just to give you a little bit of fun, if you were starting an MSP and service provider today, right now with the knowledge you've got, what would you do?
Wow, that's a tough question. What would I do? I would certainly come in with a cybersecurity offering, number one. You just have to these days. There's no way you can get around that. I would do a multi-tiered approach, like we've been doing recently, because you can only staff so many people. So it needs to be a team-based approach. As much as I love the individual, we got to move to team-based. Certainly. What else would I do? I personally like the differentiators between businesses. I think that if you come in and offer a minimum stack, then sure, that's what needs to be in order for you to do business. That's fine. In order for you to be secure, you have to have cloud-based backups, et cetera. But beyond that, it really needs to be customized. Every business is different. Every business's needs are different. And you can't one-stop shop this and think that, you know, a medium size is going to fit every organization out there. It just doesn't work that way. And you can do different packages and, you know, and a silver, gold, platinum. But I don't know. It's just that then you're doing bidding wars. So to me, it's let's customize it for this industry. Perhaps you do it by industry, but you certainly can't do it by business size. So I'm coming with a tailored approach. I really think that's the right way to go.
Well, I think that's a great place to end it. James, thanks for joining me today.
It was my pleasure, Dave. I appreciate all your questions. Those were some hard ones. So thank you. And thank you for what you do out there. I appreciate keeping everybody.
I'm here to ask you questions.
No, you're doing great. You're making a difference out there, and I appreciate it.
The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSPradio or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit MSPradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.
Yeah, you know you need protein to fuel results, but it's not easy when you're drinking the same bland, chalky shake every day. Stop punishing yourself and get to GNC for the best protein in the game, including all the hottest brands and crave-worthy flavors that'll keep you coming back for more. We're talking protein that legit tastes like cookies, your favorite cereals, indulgent desserts, and more. So bust out of your protein rut and actually look forward to those shakes with unbeatable protein at unbeatable prices. Fuel your fitness with protein at GNC.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's Jean-Luc Foot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.